The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be here. Bokushu said it needs to be closer to your mouth, and I'm working in kindergarten now, and things really should be as far away from your mouth as possible at all times. So it was odd. I was like, oh, it's okay to have this close to my mouth. It's really nice to be here this morning, particularly since I'm coming down from Woodstock, New York, and the drive this morning was horrible. So it was pouring rain and dark when I left the house. And it really kind of made me realize, you know, even when we don't see the way, we're walking upon it. So I was on that path, and my knuckles are finally kind of relaxing from that. There were multiple people who had slid off the highway, and then when I got down to the West Side Highway, there was a really horrible accident, and I just sat in traffic, and I thought I'd given myself lots of time to maybe have a croissant with my partner and just chill out a little bit before I arrived, but it was a bit more rushed than I expected. And part of the drive that I enjoy so much is that I kind of ride along the edge of the Shawangunk Ridge, you know, in the Catskills, and it's so beautiful, and you can kind of see the mountains as you're driving down. And so the mountains were obscured. I couldn't see it. And yet I knew it was there. And maybe that reminds us of something, that sometimes the unattainable, so to speak, or enlightenment is present. But maybe we're not experiencing it, or we're not aware that we're experiencing it. And there's something about the jewel of Sangha, the coming together like this, for those of us, and there's a handful of us here, that practice at a distance today. Some of you I've practiced at a distance with. So it's really nice to see you all. And I think that for us particularly, not to single anyone out, the jewel of Sangha, of coming together to practice when we're, you know, dedicated to a home practice, or hopefully dedicated to a home practice, which is really difficult, at least for myself, I find, to not have the support of other people sitting next to me, you know, practicing their own way-seeking mind alongside of me is really supportive. So every time I come down, I remember something Joshin Sensei had said, I think, maybe at the end of a Zazen Kai or something, about it being like a warm bath. And it is quite a bit like that, to come home to Sangha and sort of be surrounded by familiar faces and people doing the same thing. So, and we're extra fortunate here at the Village Zendo for a couple of reasons, I think. One is sitting right off here to my left, and she has empowered quite a few teachers who are here, and we hear talks twice a week. You know, whether we're here or not, we have access to it on podcasts, when we're on retreat, talk 6-7 times a week. So this, if you're living in the city, even if you're new to the Village Zendo, I might be a little biased, but what a resource this is, that you can get on a train, you know, and hopefully your path here on the train would be a little bit easier than mine was today. So, you know, what is it about these great teachers that we have, you know, what do we see in them? What is this clarity that, you know, hopefully we see, I see in our teachers here, and this sort of understanding that they express moment after moment, that when I first walked through the door years ago, I was attracted to, and I remain so. You know, what is that? So, of course, there's a koan in the Book of Serenity that I think might speak to this sort of ineffable thing that our teachers have, that we might want to be shooting ourselves in the direction of. And it's a dialogue between two Dharma siblings. It's Mihu and Yangshan. And Mihu doesn't ask Yangshan directly, but he has a monk ask on his behalf, do people these days need enlightenment or not? And Yangshan said, it's not that there's no enlightenment, but what can be done about falling into the secondary? And the monk went back to Mihu and he reported this. And Mihu just basically gave a thumbs up, like, yeah, I agree. That sounds about right, you know, two Dharma brothers. And so most of you know, as I said earlier, I'm working as a nurse, working one-to-one with a kid in a kindergarten class. Now completely different from what I've been doing in the past, and I'm happy to report that I've really taken to it. I love the public school schedule. I love snow days. I love two-hour delays. I love three-hour delays. I love early closures. It's pretty darn good. It beats the heck out of, you know, being in the emergency room where they go, guess what, you've been mandated, there's a snowstorm coming, so try to find a, you know, corner of, you know, pile of laundry you can fall asleep on for the next few hours, because you're going to do another 12 hours after this one. So that's a bit different, and I've taken to it. However, when we have multiple delays, suddenly Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Valentine's Day, Groundhog Day, like all the units that are supposed to happen in the classroom are like, we gotta get them done now. The kids haven't learned how to say D and what sound it makes, and we've gotta get this all done today. So the kids are all jacked up. They don't know whether they're coming or going. The faculty doesn't know what's happening. You know, what are we supposed to do? All of my kids, I think, should have complimentary scholarships to Juilliard, because their special is music. Every time we have a delay or we get pushed, so they're like, we're going to music again. Yeah, we're going to music again. So I'm like, how come they're not, you know, all gifted musicians yet? But so at any rate, on this past Friday, just a couple of days ago, we had our first full day in what seemed like forever. And I think there was a palpable sort of resistance from everyone, like, oh man, we have to do this from the beginning to the end. That's crazy, you know, what is this? And the kids were, you know, sort of like, but don't we do this? No, we're actually having a full day. But that said, they decided, you know, grab your lunch in the cafeteria, bring it back to the room. We're gonna try to squeeze in more activities while you eat, because, you know, kindergartners can really multitask well. So I was like, this is a brilliant idea. But at any rate, I take my kid, who is in a wheelchair, he has SMA, spinal muscular atrophy. So off we go, and, you know, what do you want? You know, get his tray together, and we're going back to the room with everything, and it's not our normal routine. And, you know, kindergartners really like a routine. It's nice to know, you know, these are the stops on the train, and this is what we're doing. So they're already like, what are we doing? Bring the tray back, and I realize I don't have a straw, I don't have a spoon, I don't have all the adaptive devices he needs to eat. I've got to get these things, and foolishly, I open the chocolate milk before I walk away. And I said, you know, just leave everything alone, bud, okay? I'm going to be right back. I just got to get some stuff for you. Okay. And I walk away. Mr. Tibbetts. I've never called Mr. Tibbetts. It's sort of odd to me, but Mr. Tibbetts, and I turn around, just covered, you know, chocolate milk, head to toe, soaked through the shirt, through the pants, you know, the diaper, which probably needed to change anyway. So I'm like, well, we're ahead of schedule on that. The wheelchair itself, into the electric on the wheelchair, it's everywhere. You know, it's like he intentionally did it, but he didn't. And so I'm like, how do we not fall into the secondary? You know, the immediate response that I have is like, buddy, what did I just say? Like, literally, what were the words just out of my mouth 1 second ago? And he looks at me and he says, I was thirsty. You know, I was like, yeah, you were thirsty, you know. So what can be done about this, you know, about this falling into the secondary? I recognized my frustration, you know, pretty much right as it was coming up. Didn't stop me from being frustrated. You know, I was like, this is the last thing I need to do right now. Like, now I got to get this kid who's on the other end of the school all the way back to the other end. Do we have another pair of sweatpants? You know, he's just covered. I really want to, like, hose him down, you know, and this is going to be baby wipes and and he could probably sense that Mr. Tibbetts was not jazzed about the way things were going at that moment. But I stopped myself, and I recognized he was thirsty. What is it I'm trying to quench? What is it in this that, you know, feels a little dehydrated for me? And then, you know, as quickly as that came up, it's like, so how do I, one, not cry over the spilled milk? You know, how do I not make it an issue and just be present to the fact that my little buddy was thirsty and he took a drink and he doesn't have pincer strength in his hands. It's okay-ish, but you know, not so great. So boom, fell out of his hands and he's covered. You know, I certainly can't fault him, you know. And more importantly, I think what this koan is speaking to is, and how do I not make a story up about my not having a story about the spilled milk? Because as much as the spilled milk will sour and smell bad, you know, for that sort of correction that I made, you know, where I'm like, oh, I'm frustrated, you know, take a step back. I think it's almost as bad, if not worse, to have, you know, a smell about it of, oh, look at me not being caught up. So, do people these days need enlightenment or not? I'm not sure where I heard this, and I'm pretty sure I heard it recently, and I want to say it was at Rohatsu, and it might very likely came out of our teacher's mouth. She says some pretty smart stuff. And she described enlightenment as enlightenments, plural. You know, that I think maybe, well, I'll speak for myself, when I came in, and maybe still to a certain extent, I'm, you know, looking for that magical, transformative experience on the cushion that is going to rocket me into saintly status where I never regress and never go, ah, what did I just say? You know, I just am like, oh, you spilled your milk, and I just get to cleaning it up. But something I think smells about that too. So perhaps when we, you know, just see things as they are, it looks, at least for me, a little more like this, you know. Oh my God, this kid spilled milk everywhere. This is going to be a royal pain in the ass, you know. That's the first thing that kind of comes up, and I see that happen. And then hopefully I take a beat or two. You know, if I'm to do my Catholic roots and confess, it's probably more like 2 days that I come back and go, wow, I've been telling a story about whatever it is that arose in the minute, and I've developed this whole thing about it. Like, he intentionally spilled the milk because I made him get into the stander, which he hates after PT, and I made him do it longer than he wants, and that hurts, and so this, you know, that I'm not buying into per se, but it's this running dialogue that has nothing to do with what's actually happening at all. It's all just generated thought matter. So I always think of coming to the Village Zendo years ago, and I probably first heard this back in Washington Street, where Enkyo Roshi would often say, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. You are perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And you know, it was really reassuring to someone who, growing up, did not feel so perfect and complete, and I definitely felt a lack. And I think that's a pretty common experience for almost anyone who spends some time in utero and then comes out and spends some time in the world, and maybe more of us, you know, than others. But I took them as sort of words of encouragement. You know, like, isn't that nice that Enkyo Roshi's pulled out her pom-poms and is cheering for us? You're perfect and complete. You're lacking nothing. Thanks, you know, that's great to hear. And now I'm really recognizing that it's not words of encouragement. It's stating the expression of how we actually are. We are perfect and we are complete and we are lacking nothing. And yet, we sully it up with thoughts of need more, get rid of, you know, that creep in over and over and over, you know. So how do we come back? How do we seize the opportunity to come back and just recognize the spilled milk as spilled milk? You know, just see it for what it is and not make up a story about it. Recognize our disappointment that, oh, that wasn't what I had planned. You know, I guess I'm going to have to change gears. And wow, I'm disappointed that I have to change gears. And not, you know, put a head on our head. Not, you know, put a story on top of a story. It's already there. We're already doing it. And so how do we do that? I just think, you know, I was thinking about it, I was like, it's, you know, how you get to Carnegie Hall. It's practice, practice, practice. And, you know, I know as a home practitioner, when I fall away from my time on the cushion, or I cut away my time on the cushion, or it doesn't take the priority, you know, that it should for myself, or that I want it to take for myself, I see the story generator, you know, kicks in, you know, strongly. It's there anyway. It's there through periods of zazen. It's there right now. It's consistent. And yet, if I take the time to just observe my breath and just be present to things as they are, it softens that, you know, voice a little bit. That practice that we're talking about is the practice that Dogen talks about when he sort of mashed up the two characters of practice and enlightenment. You know, they're not separate. So it's not some destination, you know, that we're heading to. It's not some carrot on the stick, prize at the end of something. If this is the first time you've ever sat any form of meditation ever, you're doing it perfectly. There's not anything more than what you've experienced today. And whether that was profound grief and pain, or whether that was a moment of bliss, you know, that happened on the cushion today, it is just that. And the more I do this, the more I'm realizing that's where it resides. It's not some magical state that is going to change everything. It's multiple enlightenments. Oh, I've fallen away. Oh, I'm back. Here I am. I've fallen away. Oh, I'm back. Here I am. I've fallen away. Oh, I'm back. So Kaizen wrote a verse on this case that I think really speaks to it. And it goes as follows. Seeking it in oneself with empty hands, you return with empty hands. In that place where fundamentally nothing is acquired, you really acquire it. I think it's worth a second read, maybe a third, fourth, fifth. Seeking it oneself with empty hands, you return with empty hands. In that place where fundamentally nothing is acquired, you really acquire it. So sometimes I have a running commentary, as I sort of mentioned before, that is pretty soft and almost has me fooled into believing that I'm present to things as they are. But there's just this little voice that is putting a twist on it, you know, having likes and dislikes, you know, in it. And then I can more and more, with more practice, step and go, oh, there's a story there too, isn't there? You know, and let go of that. And I think this points to the making sure you let go of after you've auto-corrected. I was thinking about the car this morning as I was sliding around on the highway in the, you know, hydroplaning all over the place. And I had this little clown car before that Roshi loved, this little sort of tiny Scion IQ that had no power in it at all. You just got blown all over the highway, but it was a ball to drive. But when we moved up here and into the mountains, you know, I said, oh, I got to get something with some kone, something that's got four-wheel drive and holds to the road. And, you know, I'm a big gay, I don't know how the thing works, but it auto-corrects, you know, it has some magic in it. I'm like, look, you know, I was sliding and it fixed it. So if someone knows the technology of how the car does that, please feel free to try to explain it to me. I just think of it as magic, much like the computer that I don't know how to work, so I hand to my partner and say, it's broken, and he says, you minimized it, you know, and reopens up the window I've closed. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we had that autocorrect, you know, to just sort of not even have to recognize that we were off, but whoop, we're back on. But we don't. And so that's why we come here to sort of make sure our wheels stay on the road. And as I was saying, this part of the koan, I think, really points to the smelliness of not just getting back on the road, but congratulating yourself after you got on the road, even more importantly. So in the koan, they use the image of the old white rabbit, which refers to the moon, and the moon always is a reference to enlightenment itself in Zen, almost always. And so it says in the verse, throw away the net, throw away the trap. Try not, you know, give up trying to catch the rabbit. Give up pointing yourself towards enlightenment. You know, as many times as you scoop your hand into the water to pick up that reflection of the moon, you will never get it, you know? It's there, but you're never gonna catch it in that net. You're never gonna get it in the snare, you know? Let go of it. Let go of the idea of enlightenment and delusion altogether. Then what? So I think that might be what we see in our teachers, you know, is that I'm not suggesting for a second that any of our teachers have absolute continuous practice without any break. Right? I don't think so. I think they too fall off the beam quite a bit. But because of their practice and because of their dedication to it, that autocorrect, you know, is a little more, you know, ready to do it. You know, I think recognize it more quickly, come back more quickly. Don't get caught up in the stories. The stories still get generated, but maybe they don't get caught up so much. So I'd love to point myself in the direction of that, but you know, we have warnings in the Zen tradition that the minute you start pointing yourself towards it, you're missing it, you know, because that's yet again outside of us, that it's somewhere outside of this. And it's not. It's not outside of you. So as we practice, perhaps we see that the other shore, you know, isn't necessarily a destination, you know, that it's actually right under our feet. And we're right there, and we can appreciate it moment after moment, you know, when we recognize that, you know, the place we're going to, we're already at. So we're studying Ryokan at the suggestion of our Shuso Gesho and our teacher Enkyo, and it's a beautiful book if you don't have it, Sky Above Great Wind, available in our bookstore still, I think. And there's a poem that I think speaks directly to this pointing ourselves in the direction whilst just being present to things as they are. So, pushing the pole, a rice straw carrying boat launches towards the silver moon. Pushing the pole, a rice straw carrying boat launches towards the silver moon. It takes effort and it takes determination. It takes concentration, it takes coming back, it takes sitting. It's not without its work. So when we notice that we've lost count of our breath, that our mind was pulled into the future or pulled into the past, is making up some story, maybe we can just notice it, you know, and then recognize, oh yeah, I'm on that rice straw carrying boat. I'm already engulfed in the light of that moon. I don't have to direct myself towards it. I'm in it. So. Pushing the pole, a rice straw carrying boat launches toward the silver moon.